Welcome to Packet Pushers, the greatest data networking podcast in the world, a place where nerdy is the normal and the tech is kind of raw and discussed in far too much detail. Yes, here on the Packet Pushers, where we're stuck in the hot aisle, making sure that your networks are doing things in the data center that nobody even knows that they do, we're discussing what it is that you're going to be doing there. And today's show is sponsored by Sisay and their network performance enhancement products that deliver visibility and control into the network traffic of your system in quite a different way. Now, the thing about what Sisay is doing is that not just doing quality of service, but also providing visibility. If you're like me and you've tried to do QoS systems in your network over the last 20 years and failed miserably because it's just way too hard, Sisay's put together a system of flow management. We're going to talk a little bit more about this in a minute. You know, you'd be familiar with using classify, police, rewrite, queuing of diffserv models, and you realize that getting it to work reliably across firewalls, routers, and switches is just a flat-out impossible task. But what you also know is that even if you do implement a QoS, dropping a packet is the worst possible thing you can do to a TCP flow to keep up the throughput. And that's what we're trying to work on here today. So before we get started, first of all, a quick introduction to Mr. Banks. Mr. Banks, where in the geo world are you today?
The geo world, I got to be pretty close to completely opposite of where you are. I'd have to sit and look at a globe. But I'm in Hawaii on vacation with my family. We kind of planned a big trip to come out here. So I'm speaking to you not from my normal Packet Pushers Northeast recording studio with the beautiful mic. Actually, it's not a recording studio, but you know, we have an image to uphold here. You know,
you're so dedicated. You're breaking into your holiday just to talk networking. I mean, too much networking. I mean, you're really carrying it way too far.
So the thing of it is, it's Sisay, and I started reading through the show notes for this, and I'm reading things related in some degree to QoS. I mean, I know this isn't exactly what we're getting into here. It's going to be more complex than that. But QoS has been one of those little corners of the networking universe I have enjoyed very much and have had a good bit of success. But deploying QoS models, as you pointed out, is really hard. So it's by the time you get done marking at all the ingress points you're supposed to be marking at, and then building queuing structures across the infrastructure to do something useful with those marks, and then doing the conversions you got to do to make it work with carriers, and you know, and on and on and on it goes. It's an endless task that is just about impossible to keep up with and do right. And so you settle for, well, it's working in most of the places it needs to work, and you know, that's going to be good enough until someone calls me to complain. So if there's a better way, I'm all ears.
So with that note, let's introduce Bill Beckett, who's the Chief Strategy Officer and founder of Sisay. Hi, Bill. How's it going?
Hey, Greg. How are you? Thanks.
So we've explained a little bit about the QoS challenge around what Sisay's doing. But let's set the background a little bit further about what your product is going to be doing. So start talking about how does Sisay eliminate congestion in a modern network? And what are some of the key issues that we need to solve here?
You know, one of the key factors is that during peak utilizations in a network, when people are actually experiencing congestion, it's, you know, we think of congestion as the high utilization, and it's not really the high utilization that's causing user experience problems. It's the symptoms that are associated with congestion. What Sisay is able to do is we're actually able to remove the symptoms of congestion that as it relates to TCP. So when you're seeing a very high utilization of the network and you want to throw your laptop through the window because the network's not running right, what's really happening, you know, underneath the hood there is that your sessions, your actual IP TCP sessions are going through timeout or restarts that cause you to have this bad experience. And our technology can literally remove those.
So what you're referring to there is that the TCP algorithm, which says, you know, you do SYN-SYN-ACK-ACK, where you say open up a stateful session in TCP, and then it says, how much data am I going to send? You send this much data. And it thumps out of the machine in one big fat lump, and then it exceeds the available bandwidth. And so the network has this transient spike where data has to be dropped at some point. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So TCP goes through, you know, a process called slow start, although it happens really fast. and it's a slow graduation. You know, it's basically, I say, you know, if we were a TCP session, I'd tell you, hey, Greg, I'm going to send you, you know, some data. And you get that data and say, hey, Bill, I got it. And well, great. I'm going to send you, you know, two datas. And you say, hey, great, I got two datas. And I just keep going on and on. You know,
it's an exponential curve, 2, 4, 16, 32. And then all of a sudden, you've got a 1 gig link, but you're trying to send 4 gigs down it.
And what happens when you're going through that process, whether you're on your way to this theoretical peak or you've already attained that, it's very sensitive to packet loss. So, very simple rules to follow is, if you get a single packet drop on a session, then around a round trip time, you'll immediately half the rate. If you were sending 64 packets, you'll go back down to 32. If you, get 2 packet loss, your quarter rate, and if you get more than that, then you're going to go into some TCP timeout or complete restart. And our technology will avoid those kind of...
Yeah, so you start off by sending 4 packets, then you go to 16 packets, then to 32, 64. But at some point, those packets start to get thrown away because you've exceeded the available bandwidth. So the algorithm backs off, drops by half, and then starts to ramp back up again.
Yeah, I actually said that incorrectly. I apologize. Is that most stacks are actually doing it a packet at a time, so they'll do... 1 packet, 2 packet, 3 packet, 4, and scale up from there. Just 1 packet at a time is the actual way that most people implement
it. Well, it varies from operating system to operating system. It's not even consistent within that, right?
Correct.
So, for example, Windows XP, its buffering algorithms and its transmission ramp is dramatically different from what's in Server 2012.
Absolutely. You'll see different behaviors by pretty much every operating system and even... variations of different operating systems.
Okay, so what we're saying here is that in a network where you start to discard packets to back off the TCP because you've overloaded the link or exceeded the buffer size, you're actually going to cause the TCP algorithm to start stuttering. It's going to transmit and then back off and so forth. How's that work?
Absolutely. If you don't know what you're doing and you don't do that congestion handling very intelligently, then it can be disastrous to a TCP session. And you can just have your TCP sessions crashing all over your network, causing very bad experiences.
So one of the terms that I've used before is this concept of good put and throughput. You can have a link, like a 1 meg circuit between two sites, and it's transmitting 1 megabit of data consistently all the time, but you can actually only be getting half of that as good put because the rest of it's retransmissions, isn't it?
Absolutely, and that's a very deceiving thing that a lot of operators overlook, and they don't always have the capabilities of determining or even measuring that. And they look and say, I'm getting 85% utilization, or I'm pegged up at 95% utilization. They might even be getting near 100% during their peaks, but what they're not seeing underneath there is what's really the effective rate or exactly the good put. It's the amount
the actual
of traffic
useful data.
Send over the actual traffic minus the retransmissions, and that can be a really ugly thing if you're not doing things intelligently enough during congestion moments.
A lot of the stuff that we're talking about, I'm hearing these are known TCP problems. They've been known for a long time. And there are mechanisms in what I would consider traditional QoS that help address this stuff. Random early detection as an algorithm, you can map different classes of traffic into different queues in random early detection, if you will, and it will work on selectively tail dropping certain flows so you can minimize that retransmission effect and improve your good put, to use your term there. I assume we're talking about a lot more intelligence going into things, because random early detection is kind of a blunt tool and it works to a point with certain kinds of traffic flows, but it can fall on its face. I assume we're getting to more interesting things that we're doing here with SciSay.
Yeah, it's much more intelligent, much more granular. We work, on our congestion handling all the way at the flow level. You can think of it, every single flow has a guaranteed QoS profile, and it has that from the second that it's created. Particularly where you're just talking about WRED, the pitfall in WRED is the R, which is, the random. It's rated random early discard. It was designed to, kind of predetermine when congestion was going to happen and exponentially start randomly dropping packets to stop that. Like I said, the fundamental flaw in that is the R, the random aspect of that, and it has no knowledge of flows, and it understands a class of service, and it understands how close it is to being congested, and it'll begin randomly dropping packets within a queue of where lots of flows are existing. It has no idea which flows it's hitting, so you might be a flow that's contributing very little capacity to congestion, and you might get hit. You might have the same flow that gets hit multiple times, and you could have some flows that never get hit. So there's, the benefits are the way it works. It is very random and unpredictable, and can in itself be a big cause of user experience problems.
Well, there was an attempt a while back to do weighted red, which was to try and say, I recognize that this is a telnet or an SSH session and, interruptions, or tried to say, I recognize certain applications and I'll selectively not discard from those sessions and things like that because they're low bandwidth but critical.
Yeah, but even then it's weighted, and it still it only has a knowledge of what's sitting around in a queue that it can look at, individual packets that it can analyze. I mean, Bill, from what you're describing, I think I'm catching a difference here. You're describing SciSay has knowledge of flows and what's been going on in that flow as it's been going through an interface, as opposed to whatever happens to be sitting in a queue in front of me, which is the only thing an individual device like a router was going to have knowledge of.
Yeah, that's exactly. So, in a traditional packet device, there's lots of 3 and 4 letter acronyms that we use for handling traffic. Whether it's rated red, SPQ or strict priority queuing, weighted fair queuing, you name it. There's lots of different algorithms for handling different types of traffic flows, but they are all packet-based. They're not session-aware. They're not flow-based.
Yeah.
And there's always, everything else in those, what we traditionally think of best effort in our data backgrounds. And it's really everything else in your network that's the majority of your traffic. You're not classifying all packets and all flows and prioritizing. That's just, impossible. You want to try to prioritize some traffic, and then you have a tremendous amount of everything else. And it's that everything else, there's nothing you could do to it in most conventional boxes to make it work well. In our technology, we get things all the way down to an individual flow level. Second you see the TCP send or just a new packet from a unique flow, we assign a guaranteed rate and a QoS tracker on it. We start tracking more than 40 metrics on it, actually. And we assure it a path through us at a deterministic rate that's based on the utilization of the network. We can get more into that if you like, but at a fundamental level, we're sitting around listening to all the flows. It can be hundreds of flows or even millions of flows. We detect them in real time, and we start assigning guaranteed rates to every session from the second we see them based on the load of the network.
Now, there's a trick there, Bill. There's a serious trick here, because if you think about like a 1 gig network connection, you can have tens of thousands of concurrent TCP flows in that link.
Absolutely.
Now, that's not something that routers – the reason that weighted red stopped being used was because the routers couldn't see how much traffic was coming in, identify what type of traffic it was, and then to run buffering algorithms to decide which to discard at a rate over 2 megabits per second. So for you to say that I'm going to be able to track every single flow at that sort of level means you've got some funky technology going on underneath, surely.
We've got a lot of research and development into what we call just internally our flow engines. They scale far beyond, even just 1,000 or 100,000 sessions that you mentioned. We can actually scale into millions of sessions, even across 10 gigabit links. And that's a lot of our intellectual property and our expertise is, how do we rapidly establish sessions, start tracking individual sessions, and guaranteeing the quality of every single session across the network.
So, Bill, here's something we haven't talked about yet. Is SciSay an appliance that I'm pumping my traffic through, magic silicon, or is it an x86 box, or what is the solution actually?
Yeah, at SciSay, we're purely a software company. We have lots of expertise in traditional networking, so the development team here is yeah, plenty of experience writing software that rides on top of proprietary hardware platforms. But we're a pure software play. We run on Intel x86. It can be loaded as a virtual machine under VMware or under KVM hypervisor, or it can be ran in a bare metal, you know, Intel platform. We are Intel developers. We're on the IDF. It's just purely a software play. We have partners who will, you know, if our customers don't want to, you know, kind of build their own network devices using our software, whether physically or virtually, we have partners who will help them do that.
So it's
okay.
Software. So it comes as a CD, you boot it up, whether you run it physical or in a VM is entirely your choice.
Yeah, absolutely. No CD required. Just download from our website.
Where did that come from? I'm just not sure quite where I got a CD from.
Yeah,
I'm thinking
a CD
of an ISO.
There's also a floppy diskette option.
Yeah, that's useful.
It kind of defeats parts of the purpose of designing software only. Yeah, there's really great things about being a software company. When customers want to try our network appliances, you know, there's no planes, trains, automobiles involved. We're not shipping stuff around the world. We don't have some limited supply of trial systems that we send people out. Hmm. They just log on to our website, file a request to trial the software, and within the next day they can be verified and downloading a virtual appliance and loading it up and playing with it.
Okay, so then architecturally, once I've got this thing loaded up, am I just putting traffic on a particular link through the SciSA device and I've still got my normal router that would have terminated the circuit or the line otherwise? Or is this thing like a router replacement where it's doing BGP and OSPF in addition to all the flow management stuff?
It works in two manners today. The simplest manner is you can just put it off a tap port and utilize the visualizations, the real-time analytics, and just use it literally as a visibility tool. That's not our real differentiator, though. Our real differentiator is being in control, you know, to get these benefits of these congestion controls. And in that, it just sits in as a bump in the wire. So, you know, whatever network infrastructure you have in place, no need to change anything. You insert us seamlessly in between, you know, a link like between switches, between your routers, any link where you think the congestion is a problem. And it just goes in transparently as a bump in the wire and does its magic without the, you know, other network devices having to know that. So, yeah, no BGP, no OSPF, no network changes other than just a simple insertion across a critical link.
Okay, so once it's in there, it almost sounds like a WAN optimizer in a way, where it's actually you're controlling TCP buffering, you're controlling TCP flows in such a way that you're making sure you're minimizing drops. Can you talk, a bit more about exactly what's happening in the box at that point?
Yeah, sure. So, what our typical deployment of our technology goes through, just a real simple process. We insert it as a bump in the wire across a link. It's a single-ended solution, meaning, it just, you put it on one side of the link, it just starts working. It doesn't need another pair, unit on the other side of the link or the other side of the
right,
world.
Right. Yeah.
The first thing that it'll do is, just start reporting on traffic for you, and it'll tell you everything that it sees on your network. Every application, every user, every geolocation that's happening or coming in from your network or going out of your network, just about anything you'd ever want to see, you'll start seeing on there. What our customers normally do is start picking a few things, typically applications or specific users and whatnot that they would like to prioritize. And it's just simple, set these applications. These are my business critical applications. I'll set that up. And then there's everything else. What the system will do is it'll start detecting every flow from the second that it starts, from the very first send packet. And it'll, if it's been been assigned as a protected application. It'll make sure that those flows are given priority over, you know, other traffic that hasn't been prioritized, and it'll be guaranteed a rate. And then for everything else, it's also guaranteeing a rate for each of those. And there's a number of things that could be done with everything else. For one, you could just say, look, I have, you know, everything else, and I'm going to ensure that every one of these sessions has a guaranteed rate. When we have a congestion moment that we need to relieve, what we'll do is very, very intelligently do one of two things. One, we can go in and we can find just the sessions that are causing congestion. So they're going, the very sessions are flows that are going over their guaranteed target rate. And we do a very selective discard on it, I would say, that instead of just kind of randomly, you know, dropping some packets from all these different flows, we go in and say, look, okay, here's one flow that's getting over its target rate during this congestion moment. And we pick a single packet out of it and discard it. And what that'll do is cause that individual session just to half its rate. And we also have some very unique ability on a per flow basis to slow down the flow without discarding. And that can be by insertion of variable delay into the individual session itself, so that the end station will actually back itself off through the insertion of delay.
The ramp up from the TCP protocol is partly due to the delay between the sending of the data and the acknowledgement that comes back. The faster the acknowledgement comes back, the faster the transmit window opens for sending more data. Is that correct?
Exactly. And the higher the maximum rate of that individual session will be. So in our worst case, when we're doing our very intelligent discards, you can imagine that, you know, a WRED discard just kind of closes its eyes and sticks its hand in a bucket, and there's a bunch of packets, and it pulls one.
It's your lucky day, punk. Yeah. And it could be your best application. Like, unless you've got QoS configured on every network link, on every interface, like, it could be any one of the apps is congested. And you can even have transient spikes on an input buffer for less than, you know, half a microsecond and still get packet loss. I was reading an article the other day about the performance of network stacks at 10 gig and 40 gig. And they're saying in Linux that if you drop a packet in the buffer, you've actually lost the entire buffer. You've lost entire cycles of processing in the TCP stack, because it's happening so fast.
It absolutely happens fast and is detrimental to the user experience.
And as I said, I mean, I've been working at a site recently where they're running a 10 gig link flat out from a download. They're doing an SSH session over a 10 gig link. That's the only thing that's on that 10 gig WAN link, and it's coming from Central Europe over to the UK. But their actual sustained throughput rate, although the link's running at 10 gigs, the sustained throughput rate is actually less than 8 gigs. And it turns out that the other 2 gigs is actually retransmissions and resends and latency delay. We just can't fill it up because there's so much latency for the ACKs going back and the window sizes and all this sort of stuff. And that's, you know, I'm thinking about putting one of these appliances in to test it out and see if it'll fix the problem for them. But that's the sort of thing that we're talking about.
We'd love to see problems like that and help you solve them for sure. And
yeah,
you know, what you can guarantee with the SciSafe technology is when you – you know, from a retransmission perspective during congestive times, you know, at minimum we'll cut the number of retransmissions in half from our experience. It'll be at minimum cut them into half or greater than that. So there's a great reduction in the retransmissions. The biggest benefit is, you know, complete elimination of the restarts or the timeouts, so that, you know, the timeout is probably the most irritating user experience thing that you could happen. You know, when you're browsing a website and all of a sudden it just kind of freezes up on you for some indiscriminate amount of time. That's, you know, that's a TCP timeout, and that's you know, the worst user experience you could possibly have, and that's a result of somebody's session getting overly discarded. We can, you know, at minimum we'll take half of all the retransmissions away, and at minimum we'll relieve or completely eliminate the the TCP timeouts across the link.
Now, Bill, we've talked a lot about TCP sessions here, but there's going to be definitely audience members that are thinking, okay, I have a lot of TCP traffic, but across that WAN link that might be congested from time to time, I've also got UDP traffic, voice traffic, for example. I'm assuming you guys don't manipulate that traffic. It's because we haven't talked about it at all. What does happen to UDP traffic flowing through a SISA box?
So most UDP applications today have some underlying intelligence on it. You know, although UDP itself doesn't detect rates, it doesn't have slow starts and any of the intelligence that TCP does, the applications that run on top of it do. And so they do detect packet loss, and they detect different rates.
Which, I agree. A lot of times that's why UDP gets chosen, because there's no point if the application is doing that, network traffic intelligence, that you need to burden it with TCP algorithms on top. Just ship it over UDP and the application to worry about it if traffic doesn't arrive or if there's an issue,
Absolutely. And, people are building these amazing intelligent codecs, that even run over UDP, and, they automatically adjust the rates of compression based on available bandwidth and detection and whatnot. But our product in general, we don't trust what we see inside, packet headers or the headers of flows. We detect well-behaved TCP flows and UDP flows and respond appropriately. We always give a session the benefit of the doubt, and we'll begin to do our congestion control algorithms on the individual sessions. You can think of them as a kind of a shoulder tap. We ask a session to slow itself down. If it doesn't take a shoulder tap, we kind of give it a good nudge, and if it doesn't respond to a nudge, then we whack it in the head and stop caring about it.
I've got this idea of this as a little aggressive dwarf inside the box going, "Oi, oi, oi, slow down! You're not getting the hint, brother."
Slow down.
To summarize that, Bill, it sounds like UDP. You handle flows, whether it's TCP or UDP or something else. I mean, is that fair?
No, absolutely.
So it happens that some of the magic you're doing with TCP specifically and the way you handle it, well, we're going to just drop a packet because that'll have it, or we're going to, any of the various things that you do takes advantage of you knowing the TCP algorithm and how it works. But you can also apply techniques to whatever the flow is, if it happens to be a UDP or something else.
Absolutely. So our algorithms work to whether it's a TCP flow or UDP flow. We also give people the ability, if there is something that they particularly want to do with a very specific flow, whether it's TCP or UDP, they can set up specific policies for that if that's what they desire. But the algorithms work irrespective of TCP or UDP.
So before we get talking about the visibility, because I've seen a demo of your product and the visibility part's really important to me. In fact, I would actually almost say the visibility is more important than the control, this traffic shaping, which is we've been talking about. But I also want to highlight, because you're controlling at the TCP and the UDP layer, it really doesn't matter what the actual network medium is. So whether it's Wi-Fi, Ethernet, some MPLS circuit, you're still going to be able to provide a benefit regardless of what the physical network technology is between the endpoints.
Absolutely. It works irrespective of the technology that's behind the link. That's for sure.
So it runs abstracted from that, right? So we talked about, the thing I've still got to get over is, I've actually seen you do demos at shows. I saw you at the HP event and Interop in New York, and, your claims about performance is, the only way to do that is to test it. But I've got no reason, I've seen you run the demos, and it really does. You've got to count those flows. Every packet's going to change, and you've got an awful lot of math that's going on there. Like on your website, you're talking about 10,000 applications recognized, 40 different metrics tracked per flow, and being able to get the link utilization percentage above 95. So the real magic here is in your algorithms in the software. That's the key value prop.
Several stages of our flow engine. A part of that is the analytic piece that you've seen, that I think that you're referring to, that was so impressive. on the analytics side, the reason that we're so differentiating on analytics side is traditionally, kind of a visibility package like what we have would be a multi-system approach. It might be, have one network element and one collection element, and there's a transfer of flow data either through, IPFIX or NetFlow to some type of flow collector, and there's a large delay in between, when events happen and actually seeing them. You're not capturing all of the data. What we wanted to do when we built our product and what we really set out is to capture every single flow on the network and be able to report on it. Our marketing guys came up with a slogan called "No Flow Left Behind," but we really did live by that. No flow should be left behind unaccounted for. And to do that, we had to build incredibly complicated analytic engines that actually live on our software appliances. So it's not just forwarding traffic. It's doing amazing amounts of analytics, functions on the product itself, on the virtual appliance. And the only way that it can do that and scale to millions of flows is through very robust analytic engines that we wrote that reside only in CPU and mm-hmm. and memory. So, as these millions of flows are going across and we have these 40 analytic points on them, you can think of it almost as a real-time map reduction process so that we're calculating how much traffic is being used by every application, by every user. We're detecting which applications aren't behaving well.
I think I called it like big data. You're sort of doing big data in the network flow analysis.
All the traditional network appliances that we're used to working with, whether they're routers or switches or firewalls or name your devices, imagine that they just had rich analytic information about every flow that was ever seen on the network and great granularity, and that's what we've accomplished at SciSay.
Yeah. So I want to talk more about this visibility piece because you're actually now – I mean the point is that you've got the flow engine. You're looking at every single packet in the engine itself now. So you can now build this visibility piece to actually say what is actually happening in the network. And you can start to put these charts up that I think are really quite exciting because for the first time you're actually starting to see a packet like a flow-based analysis of everything in the actual network
itself.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you literally can see – there's almost nothing you could not see on our product. So, at the high level, you can go in and see instantly, what applications are present on the network, both by, data rate and by number of sessions, number of users and whatnot. You can see, what users are using the network, what applications they're using, what locations are there. Even in the presence of millions of flows, we also give our operators or the users the ability to even drill down to actual live sessions. So for example, if you called me up and said, "Hey, Bill, my email's not working. I'm in the UK office," we could actually go down and actually look at your individual flows and determine which flows were your email and how they were performing and literally drill down to live flow, not just your aggregate.
Now, when you say drill down, you can actually see this on the web interface. Now, I think you've got a YouTube video which showed this pretty well. I think what we'll do is make sure that the YouTube video goes into the show notes. But you literally can actually say, click on the bandwidth that's going through the box, and then you can start saying, I want to sort this by app or by IP address, by source or destination, and then you can click on each flow inside of that sort of that level of granularity, isn't it?
You could start at a very high level and kind of drill down. So, for example, maybe you start and you just look and you're seeing a distribution of all the applications on your network. You can click on that application and drill down and see what individual users were actually using that application. You could drill down to that user, see everything else that they're doing, and if you wanted to, you could actually just pull up the all the flows and then drill down into those millions of flows, narrow it down all the way down to a particular user and application.
Now, by user, do we just mean IP address like an endpoint, or do we mean user like I'm smart about Active Directory and I know what this individual user is?
The former. So it's much more intelligent than just the IP address. So we have an open user API that correlates IP addresses to users. The big difference there is that an IP address is just an IP address, an entity, and we track every IP address that ever goes across us. In fact, we can do that to millions or even a billion unique IP addresses we can monitor and track. But we also associate those to a user through a user API that can be, Microsoft Active Directory or Radius or LDAP or a number of other directory services. It's all done through Python scripts that we build. The main difference there is that a user can have multiple IPs associated to them. I have a laptop, I have an iPhone, I have a tablet, and each one of those can be associated up to an entity called Bill, who's a user.
So
I can set policies on Bill if I'd like to.
So we talked earlier about the 40 metrics that you enforce. What are some of those metrics that you're actually looking at? So in the visibility interface, can I see those metrics and do something with them too?
Absolutely. 40 is a lot, and it's actually growing quite rapidly. We add things in our development cycles on releases. Some of the things that are on there are very QoS oriented, so they're measurement. They show what we're tracking as a guaranteed rate for that flow, what its actual real-time rate is, what its average rate is, how long it's ran, how much data it's sent, a number of measurement-based things. There's also a lot of external correlations to it, so we are doing kind of a DPI-type function for the first 1 to 15, 20 packets, identifying the application information. We identify the user, the geolocation, and a number of other things.
So by geolocation, I'm assuming you mean literally where in the world that they are, which is going to mean different things depending on what traffic you're monitoring. If it's internet link, that's one thing. If they're inside the company, that's yet another thing. And some of the geolocation stuff I've worked with in the past, there's a subscription involved where you've got some GeoIP database that you're tied into to get that data. How are you guys doing it?
So we have a GeoIP database that ships with the product. It gives you high-level GeoIP data. It can be updated. But we leave it open to the users. So, particularly on enterprise networks, multi-sites, they have, many different sites all using different private addresses. And we can't ship something that tells them, what their private addresses are by default. So we leave this very open so you can create your own geo databases and modify them as well. So, I might have 192.168.1.0 be SISA San Jose, and 192.168.2.0 be SISA Singapore, for example, and 3.0 be an East Coast office, and define our own. But it ships with a very high level country based, and can be modified, or you can import other geo databases, all the way down to city level. That's what you desire.
Gotcha. Okay, makes sense. Yeah,
I want to talk a little bit about flow identification, because your ability to track flows has got to be pretty good. Now, there's a lot of appliances out there like deep packet inspection or DPI appliances or IPSs, IDSs, and technologies like that. And ultimately, a lot of the differences competitively between the different vendors is how you recognize it. Now, so what are you doing to analyze flows and to categorize them? What do you do in that area?
So we have three mechanisms that we do to categorize a flow in terms of what its application are. One, we have a signature database that has a couple thousand applications that we track. That gives us signature analysis on things like the Skype session or BitTorrents or different applications requiring signature analysis. when we fail at signature analysis, we also have a URL crawler that we devised. It'll track every unique URL that it sees on the network. This scales up to, you know, literally millions of different URLs. So, you know, if you just went to, you know, www.gregfarrow.com one time, we create a trackable entity that shows, you know, what website that actually was by URL. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, you know, if a session is encrypted, if it's like HTTP based, the actual signature exchange on that is not encrypted. So we go in and we look at the signature exchange. You know, we note that it's, you know, a Google signature, and we'll report it as Google traffic at the high level. There's other instances where that, you know, all of those might fail, and then we have a fallback where we have a DNS cache. So we're actually looking at all the DNS requests that go across the network and looking at their inverse responses. So if we fail a signature analysis and we fail a URL lookup, we'll use the last known reverse DNS name for that host that we've seen across the network. And we do a number of other analytic functions that will correlate the behaviors and past behaviors of different hosts on the network to help determine what applications are, so that we can identify those.
Sounds like you're using a combination of, like, there's some signatures in there. You know, you can recognize certain things by signatures, URLs, DNS names, and then you're also using some heuristic type capabilities to actually say, you know, if you see these patterns or this heuristic capability, then this must be what it is. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And we also do a little bit of intelligent learning, almost artificial intelligence, if you will, on the product, where we memorize things that we've detected off other hosts, and can make some presumptions on patterns that we see when we see them repeated.
Bill, you'd mentioned earlier on, talking about when you were tracking these flows, you got 40 different metrics that you get a hold of, which I ran out pretty quick trying to think of maybe, you know, 5 or 6 things, but you get up to 40. Can you talk through some of, you know, we don't have to talk about all 40, but just kind of give us some examples of what you guys are tracking.
What we track is a number of quality of service metrics and a number of data extractions that we've done. So from a quality of service perspective, I hope I'll probably miss some, but we have, you know, what we have as a guaranteed target rate for that session, and that target rate is changing, you know, at least five times a second, every 200 milliseconds, so that a session, you know, will be guaranteed that rate. It's being tracked on there. And then we track what the actual arrival rate of a flow is, you know, what its average rate is, what its maximum peak rate has been, how much data is sent over time, and how long it's lasted. We have our individual congestion thresholds for that session. So when it exceeds a certain rate, when are we going to start, telling it to back off? And we report and track, you know, if we've ever actually done a congestion relief on that individual session, the flow record will tell you so. And then a number of those other data points that we were just talking about, like what application it is, what user it's been correlated to, what geolocation it's been correlated to, BGP autonomous system numbers, lots of different items.
So it's a combination of things that you can observe and then things that you calculate as you do those observations.
Absolutely. I forgot some of the other critical things on there. I'll mention.
Sure,
also, on an individual session basis, we also track how many retransmits that individual session has and how many timeouts it's actually, you know, whether it's been subjected to a timeout or not. And we use that to form a health indicator for that flow, which you could think of as actually an individual reading of good put for on an individual session. so that we have the ability to understand how well, you know, applications are running across our network. We use those you know, timeouts, retransmission events, even delay that's being seen on sessions to come up with indicators when things aren't going well on a network, so we can red flag applications and users and geolocations that are having bad quality of experiences across the network. And that's part of those 40 metrics as well.
Just finally, there's a couple of smaller points that we probably should quickly look into, which is that if you're a carrier or a service provider of some sort, this appliance can be used there, like in an NFV or at the customer edge of their network as an appliance to help them. I mean, I can't see why it wouldn't, but I mean, I just asked the question.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, in the enterprise space, there's a lot of confusion on NFV. It's kind of more of a carrier term. You know, SciSay was designed, you know, to be a software-only appliance that could seamlessly fit into NFV environments through a programmable interface. We call that, you know, just our REST API. In NFV environments, you end up having, you know, NFV type controllers that are going to be monitoring, provisioning, orchestrating virtual appliances, if you will. In an enterprise environment, a lot of people don't know what NFV is, and they just care about virtual appliances. You know, if you talk to the guys running the networks, it's just, you know, if you ask them if they want NFV, they'll say what?
Yeah,
you know, what's NFV? But if you ask them if they want a physical appliance or a virtual appliance,
do you want a load balancer? Do you want a firewall? Do you want an IDS? Do you want a radius diameter server in this point of the network? Do you want a 3G gateway? They go, yeah, no, I want those.
And they would, you know, mostly start opting for the software based appliances versus, you know, having a product actually shipped to them. So we built a product that fits into this NFV environment through the REST API, but as it relates to being a virtual appliance, you know, you plug us into your VMware environment, or if you're playing with OpenStack, you can put it in an OpenStack environment and just launch it as a virtual machine with some network interfaces. But we have all the tools, you know, like you know, graphical user interfaces, SNMP controllers, you know, to send traps and monitor. We have, you know, CLIs for the hardcore guys who really like CLIs. Mm-hmm. So all those tools, you know, are there, and people wouldn't know the difference of whether it's a virtual appliance or a physical appliance.
So those things are all, you know, I guess my point would be is I would see this, I'm mostly thinking of the enterprise myself, but NFV is in the DMZ. It's where in the DMZ of a corporate network where you have proxy servers and firewall instances and there's all these virtual mail systems and stuff like that. They can all run just as equally in a VM as they can on physical appliances, if not physical servers. But the second thing is that increasingly you can start to put these types of appliances into groomed traffic. Now, the thing about it is that your appliance can be one-sided. So you can actually smooth traffic in and out of your internet connection, which means it can actually be quite useful for things like hybrid cloud or VPN connections because you're actually smoothing the TCP or the UDP flow that's going on. And because you're doing it in network and you're not actually doing anything modification of the actual TCP packet, you don't actually have to have one at each end. So your device works independently. So you can just have one in the DMZ or one on the WAN gateway, and you can actually improve everything in the network just that way. That's why I'm asking these questions about NFV.
Absolutely, and the, you know, the NFV and software aspect of our product just means I can implement it really simply in my network. Just throw it into my environment, put it in the DMZ zone. You're right; just putting it across that internet link or the wide area link is a very practical use case that we see a lot. It tends to be the, you know, one of the most critical links in the network where we want to deploy visibility and control aspects, and it only needs to go in one location to be beneficial.
You don't need to have one at each end. Like a lot of people think of, you know, everything QoS has to be done at every point in the network, or like a WAN accelerator, you have to have one doing the compression and one doing the decompression, one at each end. This is not required for this device. You just have one in the network somewhere between the two endpoints, done, in line.
Absolutely.
Okay.
There's no double-headed side of this. It's just a single end, and it gives you all the benefits, especially that's really relevant these days as people are shifting to cloud applications, because there's, you know, you're not going to get Amazon and your tax, you know, software as a service putting some other hardware in their network for you. You just need to people need to be able to identify their cloud applications and put some policies around them.
Yeah, to me it's sort of like, to me the tool has, the thing that interests me about SciSay is, you know, your concept of flow management isn't new. It's something that I've seen several times over the years. But what's different now about your technology is that we're actually in a time when software can scale. We have enough compute power that you can bring the combination of smart algorithms, big data. We've got storage space inside of an x86 system so that you can actually hold data about the flows, the DPI. You're saying that earlier that if you've seen this URL, you actually keep that. If you see this DNS lookup, you keep that. There's a whole bunch of things coming together to make your technology possible for the first time in the history. We've always been able to count flows, but we've never had the capability to do it at scale before.
Yeah, it's really about scale. And the other really exciting thing about our technology, and of course, you know, what got me interested enough to start the company and build it, is this whole concept of being able to, you know, instantly assure every single session in a network and very intelligently control it. You know, I've been a QoS geek my whole life. I won't tell you how far that goes back, but you know, it goes back to I will tell you. No, I was configuring, X25 and even frame relay, discard eligible bits, and went into ATM, CBR, VBR, real time, non real time, and UBRs. And always doing different types of QoS models that, most recently, MPLS traffic engineered networks and, IP diff serve models that map into MPLS diff serve models and whatnot. And they're just overly complicated, and nobody actually uses them except in lab environments. And
yeah, it QoS is one of these things where we all study it and we all nod our heads and say, well, this is the... But even the RFC for IETF diff serve actually says, this is the least best thing that we can do. It's rough, it's ready, it's not perfect, but it's all we can do at this point in time because we have these distributed systems. The only way we can bring a QoS system together is to do it hop by hop. But the problem with hop by hop is as soon as you discard a packet, the TCP model breaks down. As soon as you start discarding packets, TCP starts to retransmit. Even though your links are 100% full, some percentage of that traffic, and it can be very significant, is actually wasted bandwidth. It's not useful bandwidth. It's just you've spent a lot of money to waste bandwidth, and it's part of TCP. You can't fix it. You can't say, let's change TCP, because that's never going to happen. So you have to find other ways to handle it, right?
We're not going to have solutions where the whole world needs to upgrade their TCP stacks at one time. So.
Yeah. Well, the only queuing that ever works is priority queuing, and it only works if you allocate less than 10% of the traffic to the priority queue part, right? And that's the rule since I started doing it back in 1999, when we started doing traffic shaping in 1999. That rule hasn't changed in 20 years as far as I'm concerned. You can traffic shape 20% of your traffic. Everything else has got to be suck it and see. But as I said before, these appliances aren't new. They've been around for a long, long time. But we're now at a point where the software capabilities that we have, the algorithms and features, can actually work now. So you should get out there and check it up on SciSay. Okay, so I just want to get – I think we've gone about as far as we can go inside of an audio show. But I just wanted to say – so, Bill, I was just saying how, we're now at that unique convergence of the three points. So tell me what is – do you want to respond to that?
Put a different perspective on what you mentioned, why – are things changing and why are different things possible? And I think that we have, Moore's Law and Intel and others to thank for this. And, the way I look at it is, as our processors and compute power increases higher and higher, we have more clock cycles in between packets to do intelligent stuff. Every time we see a new processor come out, a new Intel CPU and even a new ARM CPU, we get higher frequencies, we get more cores, and we get more tools to do calculations on. And the more clock cycles that I get in between interframe gaps, you know, we're talking microseconds, you know, how many clock cycles do I get in between, you know, in 9.6 microseconds? Well, those are getting enormous now, and they're getting bigger and bigger, and we can do more intelligent real-time actions in clock cycles in between packets that is making this technology available.
Okay, Bill. So where can people find out more about SciSay?
Go to our website, www.scisay.com. You can get some literature on there, and you can sign up for a trial. The trial approval process goes very quick in order to get somebody
Like you said, it's just software. You can drop it onto your favorite KVM VMware and start clicking away.
Absolutely.
Mr. Banks, what's your thoughts?
Mr. Banks likes the SciSay idea. And by the way, if we didn't spell that, S-A-I-S-E-I, that is SciSay, if you're looking for them on the internet, just for absolute clarity, since yeah. This was a really interesting product that I wanted to hear more about today. It was good stuff. The thing that I was reflecting about the most as I was listening to this and chatting with you, Bill, was my experience doing large-scale QoS with some big enterprises and, you know, across multiple infrastructures, like QoS across a WAN coming into a data center and then back, and just how bloody hard it was, and then the annoyances dealing with different sorts of infrastructure, like, well, I got some people coming in across ATM IMAN, I got some people coming in across Frame Relay, and this is all back in the day, but man, it just was a pain to make it all work right, and the different diff serve models, as you were saying, and then, you know, getting everything classified is one thing. Getting everything queued properly on different interfaces is another thing. If you have something that's a layer above all that, dealing with it at a TCP level, you don't have to worry about those things. And now being able to do it at scale, where you're into millions of flows, that's fabulous. This is more like where it's not just like an individual product should be the only thing doing this. I mean, SciSay, you guys have a bright future, because I think a lot of people are going to look at this and go, yeah, this is the way we should all be doing this. And this will be real interesting to see how this goes as you guys become more prominent out there, which I think is inevitable. Just because to me, it's like, okay, this is checking all the right boxes. It's doing the right kind of things for flow control. So anyway, you guys know me, the Packet Pushers audience, Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter. My blog is ethancbanks.com.
And Ethan, I just want to add one more thing to your, this is what QoS is for. Has you ever tried to configure QoS on a firewall? What happens when you pass traffic through a firewall?
Yes, and not willingly, and it varies dramatically by platform and how good it does it or doesn't do it. Sometimes the best you can get is just pass it through.
What about a packet inspection firewall, like these new next-generation firewalls that try and do, you know, funky stuff, and then what happens when they slow down too much? And, you know, you don't get any QoS through a firewall in reality, but SciSay can make a shot at that. And more importantly, it can give you some visibility that the firewall's fragging things, which is pretty interesting. So you can find me, I'm Greg Farrow, on my blog at etherealmind.com. But most importantly, you can find out more about SciSay. There'll be show notes on the blog that hosted accompanies the show on the blog at packetpushers.net. You're welcome to come along and hit that up, leave questions. You can always get in contact with SciSay by going to their website, or you can leave comments on the show notes and ask for help, and we'll be patrolling there and looking out for you. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.